Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 26, entitled Fundamental Principles of Material Nature, Text 35. Nabasa sabdatan matra kala gatya vikurvataha sparso bhavatata vayus Tvaksparsasya sasangraha. Nabasa, from eater. Sabdatan matrad, which he falls from the subtle element sound. Kalagatya, under the impulse of time. Vikurvataha, undergoing transformation. Sparsa, the subtle element touch. Abhavad, evolved. Tata, thence. Vayu, air. Tvak, the sense of touch. Sparshasya, of touch. Cha, end. Sangraha, perception. Translation. From ethereal existence which evolves from sound, the next transformation takes place under the impulse of time, and thus the subtle element touch, and hence the air and sense of touch, become prominent. In the purport. In the course of time, when the subtle forms are transformed to gross forms, they become objects of touch. The objects of touch and the tactile sense also develop after this evolution in time. Sound is the first sense objects to exhibit material existence, and from the perception of sound, touch perception evolves, and from touch perception, the perception of sight. That is the way of the gradual evolution of our perceptive objects. The modern worldview is presenting that life came from a biochemical origin. It is thought that at one point certain DNA molecules, due to some looping process, transformed, and that life came about. This, of course, has never been confirmed by any tests or any laboratory experiment. We are still depending on nature to produce life. That cannot be produced by any scientist. So, Srimad Bhagavatam has a totally different conception of how life actually takes place. Rather than that, from the gross energy, the Bhagavatam manifests itself from the gross elements upwards, that out of matter, spirit develops. We understand that matter develops from spirit, that first there is spirit, and then matter manifests. And that is the difference in understanding. The original spirit is the Supreme Spirit, Lord Sri Krishna, who expands himself into unlimited form. He is the origin of everything. This is mentioned in the Vedanta Sutra. The Vedanta, Veda means knowledge, and Anta means end. So the final conclusion of all knowledge is found in the Vedanta Sutra. And it explains, Janmadi Asi Yataha. It is said that everything is emanating from the original Supreme Lord. Also, it is stated, Atato Brahma Yigyasa, that now that one has attained the human form of life, one must inquire into the Absolute Truth. The point being that the human form of life is very rarely attained, and that it happens very, very quickly. And before we know it, it has gone by, and an opportunity to actually understand the Absolute Truth may easily have passed. Therefore, the human form of life is particularly meant for understanding Param Satyam, or the Absolute Truth. The Absolute Truth being that Krishna is the source of all sources, that everything is emanating from Him. And when this is thoroughly understood, then everything is simply experienced as such, as a transformation of Krishna's energy. And this process of transformation is being described in this chapter. It is also said in Bhagavatam that transformation takes place in six stages, or sadavikar, which means that things come into being, they grow, they give up some byproducts, they flourish for some time, begin to dwindle, and subsequently cease to exist. And that happens to anything and everything in this material world. Nothing remains. That is the nature of the material energy. Everything is temporary by nature. So, somehow or other, we are looking at people struggling with the material energy. It's very difficult to deal with the material energy, because the material energy has its own momentum. It is not to be controlled by any of us. No one in the world has the power to control the material energy for long. For a while, things seem to be perfectly under control. For a while, complex manipulations and plans work fine. But then, it fails. This is the time of electronics. And how many failures do appear in electronics, right? How many problems with computers? Computers drive you crazy because they're supposed to do something and they don't do it, right? It doesn't work, right? It's always the same old problem. It's like logically the thing should work and everything, you did everything right and then it didn't work. And this is an example of how our intricate science in this world doesn't work. Still, in spite of all our manipulation, in spite of all our complex attempts, and in spite of all our so-called great achievements, we are still not getting the material energy under control. Now, the Romans were saying that nature, right, is very difficult to bring under control. One may bring a pitchfork and try and drive out nature, and only to see that nature will return again. Nowadays, we've given up on the pitchfork and use bulldozers and other more powerful means and put layers of concrete on top of nature. But still, even that concrete is cracking. A pitchfork is the fork that farmers use, the old farmers, you know, to scoop up the hay. Nowadays, in the western part of the world, an item for the museum. It's like you can still see these things on some farms. They've turned the barn into a museum and they have the old milking equipment and the old hay equipment, etc. You know, those were the days, right? Nowadays, this big machine goes over the harvester and it just rolls up all the hay and packs it in plastic and then leaves it standing there at the side of the field, right? That's modern times. No more pitchforks. But in spite of all our modern technology, nature strikes back, right? Nature is still not under control. It is fundamentally not possible to get nature under control, right? And therefore, we should understand that right now we are in an unholy combination. Sometimes when a man has an illicit relationship with some lady, which is a common practice here in Amsterdam, then we are calling that an unholy alliance, right? An unholy relationship. Well, all of us have an unholy relationship, right? All of us. Because the soul being connected to the body is a very unholy relationship. Right? It is totally not meant to be. There's nothing positive going to come out of this relationship. The soul falling prey to the body is falling prey to a prostitute. Right? That's what happens to the soul. Prabhupada explained that the tongue is like a prostitute. The tongue is never satisfied. Well, the entire body, all the senses are like prostitutes, right? Never satisfied, lusty, demanding more and more facility, but actually there is no well-being for the soul. The soul, in combination with this unholy alliance of the material body, will just degrade and lose rapidly its natural potency. It is said that when the soul enters into the material body, it enters into a dormant stage, which means that the soul becomes covered, and that at that stage the natural powers and potencies of the soul are being checked. Prabhupada explains that the soul is many, many times more powerful than the sun. Right? So considering that, how powerful is the sun, right? How long can we stare in the sun? Such power. The sun here in Holland, it's not so impressive. But in Africa, where I just was, wow, that sun, it is like murderous, right? It burns your skin in less than 11 minutes, right? To like purple, right? Red is not even the word. Purple, right? And the next day, skin is just peeling off and hanging there in flaps on all sides. That's how powerful the sun is in Africa, right? The ozone layer, very thin, and everybody knows it, you know, sunblock all over the place, you know. The sun is so powerful, and nonetheless, the soul is described as much more powerful. The sun heats up the entire universe. When the sun is down, my God, what misery is there. When the sun returns, a little heat. And when there's too much sun, oh my God. Sit in Vrindavan in the summer at 50 degrees, under the fan with feet in a bucket with water, with a wet cloth over the head, drinking ice-cold nimbupani, lemon water, and still being thirsty, immediately again after having finished the cup, right? One can have a constant hose connected to his mouth, right? with ice water, and still it wouldn't be enough, right? And there's no passing of any urine or nothing. It all evaporates just like that. One can imagine what's going on in extreme heat like that. How dependent are we? How powerful is the sun? And yet the soul is described as more powerful than the sun. But this power is not manifest. The ultimate power of the soul is the power to conquer death. What is a greater power in this world than to conquer death? Because, after all, even the most powerful gets defeated by death. There is no one in that regards who does not get defeated. The greatest powerful sumo wrestlers, right? Where can you imagine something bigger than a sumo wrestler, right? There's nothing bigger. A man of 300 and something kilo, right? Stamps his foot on the ground and the earth is trembling. A sumo wrestler. And another sumo wrestler stands opposite of him. And look at the sheer exhibition there of brute force, right? Manifest in this hulk of flesh, right? And in spite of all this power, our sumo wrestlers also die, right? Elephants die after a long time, live a little longer than we do, 125 years. Even the redwood trees in California, which are the biggest trees in the world, huge monster trees which stand for 1,000 years, even they die. Right. So, all living beings die, and that is the way it is. So, death defeats all living beings, but yet the soul is still more powerful. Because the soul is not subject to death. Even the sun does not exist eternal. Even the sun is extinguished at one point of time within this universe at the night of Brahma, when the universe is not existing, and when the entire material energy enters into the body of Mahavishnu. At that time, the soul continues to exist. Therefore, the soul is all-powerful. The soul has become amrita, or immortal. It does not die. The soul is amrita. However, Srila Prabhupada explains in the introduction to the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he explains about the meaning of the words Chaitanya Charitamrita. And he says that Chaitanya means the living force. The Chaitanya Charitamrita is the nectar as Charita, and Amrita is immortality. So the nectar of immortality described in relationship to the living force that manifests itself that like that in an immortal state. But Prabhupada says we don't see that. We don't see that the living force is manifesting itself in an immortal state. Where have we noticed that in this world? But this actually is possible, right? Through the process given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the process of Harinama, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasteva, 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 Gati Ranyata. The process for this age, the transcendental sound vibration of the chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. That chanting of the holy name is so powerful that it cuts right through all the thick coverings that cover the soul and make the soul lose its natural power. What has happened to us? We are now powerless, right? We have become petty little creatures, right? With petty powers that do not match our mighty desires. Our desires are very great and our powers are so unlimited and we can't do anything. Who can fly? Right? Who can create? Yes. We are playing God nowadays with virtual realities or genetic engineering. But all that is simply playing. We are creating. But we're not really creating. What are we creating? Are we creating planets? Are we creating galaxies? Are we creating universes? What are we creating? Our creations are very, very small and insignificant. And nonetheless, we are very absorbed. We're absorbed in our art. We're absorbed to make a statement. Everyone wants to have some meaning, wants to leave a mark on the planet, right? Something. Not totally in oblivion, not totally forgotten, live and not remembered by anyone, oh no, right? Fall into a vacuum, the worst thing you could possibly imagine, right? No one to cry on your funeral, right? Imagine that you would say on your funeral, no one would cry. How would you feel, right? This is a question. But what do you care? Dead is dead, and if nobody cries, nobody cries. You won't be there to bother with it, right? Why do we care? Right? Why do we care about our funeral? Why do we leave a will? Why do we even care about anything? Just dead is dead, right? Dead is gone, right? But the soul is meant to be unrestricted. Isn't that what we wanted? Freedom, freedom, freedom. Yes, it's my life and I do what I want, right? And in this way, we broke loose, break the barriers, break the chains, break everything, get out of here, break free, break loose, do it all. Why don't we just do it in the road? Why don't we do what we want? Why aren't we just like, you know, the animals that we really are, right? What holds us back? You know, is it real? Is it false morality? Is this meant to be? All these kind of tendencies have emerged from deep within, from instinctively. An instinctive cry has come out of our hearts for freedom and to just let go. And singers are singing the song, you know, let it all hang out, let it all hang out, right? And we are, we're listening to our prophets to some extent, until we are exhausted and can do no more, until we feel burned out and look at two, right? Like with faces that have that show the marks of years of life on the wild side, right? So what to do, right? Here we are, an early morning in Amsterdam, a city full of burned out people who have lived too intensely, too much, all at once, trying it to have it all, and it didn't really work. And anyway, now here we are in an early morning. And what are we doing? We are discussing the greatest sacred information that has ever entered into this world. We are speaking of the holiest of all texts that are available to men. We are now here about to reveal the greatest secret of all secrets that has been hidden for many years, for centuries, for millennia, in the Sanskrit language, and was only known to saintly brahmanas and not to the common man. But this knowledge has now come to the streets of Amsterdam, to the streets of New York, and to the streets of all cities of the world. This knowledge has now reached even remote villages. Recently, I was traveling in the mid of winter in Estonia, where the icy, snowy wind was blowing over the road, and we drove in a car where the seat was heated, right? All dressed up in the maximum attire that we could possibly wear, with big snow boots, driving towards the Russian border, which felt like driving into nowhere, driving into oblivion, driving into the dead of night, never to return, driving towards the Russian border. Oh my God, where are we going? Is there an end to this road? Yes, I'm afraid there is. I'm afraid it's just gonna stop, and then we're gonna fall in a black, deep, dark hole, right? Somewhere, even in that remote corner of the world, there was a house, and in that house, a beautiful temple, a beautiful altar, bigger than this one, and more elaborate, and more beautifully decorated, with amazing deities and tulsi plants, very big. The sacred tulsi plant that is appreciated so much by Lord Krishna was right there. Krishna never eats anything without a tulsi leaf placed on the preparation. Krishna says, patram puspam phalam toyam, just offer me a flower, a fruit, some leaf. But the leaf that Krishna likes the most is the tulsi leaf. And that must be placed on any other vegetable that Krishna eats. The devotees know it well, and painstakingly have brought tulasi from India, and are caring for tulasi in this cold, western, horrible climate, which is not easy. And still, it is done, even in the deep, remote corners of Estonia, just on the Russian border. So imagine, Krishna consciousness, this knowledge is everywhere. How is it possible? And what will it do for us? This knowledge will cut all our falsity. It will cut that out. Just as we have been forced by our environment to play a role, right? Sit still, behave, don't do this, don't do that, right? And we have been drilled by a mother, a father, teachers, a brother, a sister, society, the media, and finally we have been formed into something which we are not. And then we realize that that is not only from this lifetime, but from so many other previous lifetimes also. And here we are, the mix, you know, the ones who have lost their true identity. Who are we? Who knows, right? But here we receive the Srimad Bhagavatam, the sacred text which reveal the absolute truth. The truth about ourselves, who we are, what we are, what to do with life, what is the purpose of it all? Is this all there is? Is this all there is? Yes, is it all there is? Fortunately not. There is more in this world than just this struggle with a world that somehow or other always gets out of control again and again. This, there is the soul. And the soul can be reconstituted in its full glories. Now that soul is covered by all the contamination of matter. But when that soul is liberated by chanting the Maha Mantra, then that soul will become restored in its full potency and full powers. And ultimately the full power of the soul is to love. Is to love every moment of existence. Not just to love in the material sense, you know, ich bin von Kopf bis Fuß auf Liebe eingestellt. Not that kind of love, but true love. Loving every moment, loving every aspect of existence. That is only possible on the spiritual platform. When one is pure and free from lust, greed, anger, hate, envy, madness, illusion, and all these lower qualities. At that stage, with a pure heart, when one appears before the Lord, who is the supreme creator of all that be, when one dedicates his full energy for the pleasure of the Lord, who is He who gave life to us, who gave us everything and anything, that Lord, if we serve Him with all the energy of our soul, right, then suddenly we flourish. And existence becomes an ocean of nectar, an ocean of happiness, an ocean of bliss, an ocean of realization, and a wonderful experience, an eternal adventure which never ends. No longer boring existence. No longer slowly getting gray. No longer gradually getting old. No longer losing it, no longer being reduced, right? In this world, we are all being reduced, right? More and more, or less and less, I should say, until thou isst not, right? As Shakespeare said it, right? Reduced to naught, right? Right? With TH, I think, you know, or to nothing, it means, right? Reduced till there is nothing, nothing but a name, and that a name, yes, right? We're remembering still George Harrison, now he is a name. We're remembering Herman Brood, right, who jumped off the roof here in Amsterdam, you know, of the Hilton Hotel. Just a name now, right? Just a name. Soon to be forgotten. Herman what? You know? Right? Which one? Right? So many Hermanns, right? Hermann Hesse, Hermann Brood, and what was the other one? Anyway. Huh? Stork. Stork. Never heard of him. Right? So, Hermann Heyermans. Just see. So many Hermanns have existed. Even Hermann Jonsson, right? Right? And all these personalities, right, are here in this world in their identities. And they think that they are these identities. And we are also thinking. We can go over all the names. Yes, you know, your name. My karmic name is, or my material name is not very original, as you all know. It's Paul Koch, right? And if you look in the phone directory, my God, you know, you look at Koch, right? There's so many pages of Koch, and then there's many P's. And of these many P's, you know, there are many Pauls. And it's happened several times to me that I met someone, gave him a handshake, and he said, Paul Koch, you know, and I said also, Paul Koch. And he looked at me, hey, you know, are you pulling my leg or something, right? Now, I don't identify very much anymore with that, because now I'm no longer Paul Koch, you know, I'm Kadambakanna Swami, right? And how long will I be Kadambakanna Swami, right? I'm thinking that I'm Kadambakanna Swami, you know, like I got my garland swinging around my neck, I got my stick and I'm flying around the world, I got a ticket in my pocket and air miles on my card, I've got a good computer and I am pretty smart, and in this way, things are really cool, you know, KK Swami in the air, right? All right, you know, it's wonderful. How long will I have this identity for? not much longer. He's getting old already. He's losing it, losing his wit, right? It's slowly wearing out. He's going blind, you know. His beautiful Gandharva voice is already getting hoarse, right? My God, what's going to be the future, right? Doctors say, slow down. Doctors say, watch out, you know. Your time is up, right? Sir, at your age, what do you mean my age, you know? Right? How long will I be this identity? How long will any of us be in this particular form? Our time is up soon. But underneath this Kadambakanana Swami identity or Paravita identity or Gauranga Premananda identity or any identity, underneath this identity is another one. Another one. The real one. The spirit soul. Has its own eternal spiritual identity. What will it be? Oh, I can't wait to see, right? When, oh, when will that day come that we will return to the spiritual world? And I pray that somehow or other I may stay this lifetime very close to Krishna. Whatever will be done, let me stay close to Krishna. Whatever happens, let me somehow or other go on and serve Krishna, so that at the end of life, there is a chance that I may remember Krishna. And by remembering Krishna, yes, antakala chamam eva smaram muktva kalevaram, then we can return to the spiritual world. Oh, when will that day be ours? Isn't it? So that is really what it's all about. And everything else here in Amsterdam is just the song and dance of the fool on the hill, right? Who is actually all alone. Everyone is in this city partying it up all together, and you know, like the whole city's doing it. But in the end, everyone is alone. I love you, darling. It's not true. In the end, we're all alone, right? All alone in the world. All alone. Yes, this is material life. But for a devotee is always with Krishna. And therefore, a devotee doesn't experience the pain of this loneliness. But the devotee experiences great comfort, because anything can happen. I'm with Krishna, so I don't care. When the cowherd boys saw the big mouth of Agasura wide open, the tongue huge like a highway, inviting them to go in, they said, not. It looks like a big snake. Anyway, you know, that's what can happen to us. Krishna's with us. You know, Krishna will do something. You know, let's go. Let's check it out. Right? That's the spirit. A devotee knows that Krishna will always protect, because Krishna is so merciful that he cares about every living being. And name bhakta pranasyati, my devotee will never perish. That is Krishna's promise, without a doubt. So, therefore, we in this world take shelter of Krishna. And only for those who have taken shelter of Krishna, defeat will be conquered. Everyone else, everyone else in this world is defeated in the cause of his life so many times. But a devotee always gains. Therefore, whatever we do in devotional service is gain and is wonderful. And we are fortunate, and we must try and do some service for Krishna. Because at the end of our life, that will be the most important moment. You know, you have these stories about people who at the end of their life get a picture of the most important events in their life. You know, like, you know, let's go through a few, you know, like that's some event from the childhood, your marriage, you know, like the death of your mother and all these, some big accident. All these things are there. All these pictures, the main pictures of life come, right, suddenly, like sometimes when someone falls off a cliff, all these pictures come of life. And then in the midst of that, there's suddenly a picture of meeting a devotee. So you're thinking, hey, well, what's that picture doing here? Right? You know, all the other pictures are major events. And what's this Hare Krishna doing in the middle of my picture series, right? It's not supposed to be there of main events in my life. No. Actually, that connection that we had with Krishna will, at the end of our life, prove to be the most important event in our life. The most important. Nothing greater, actually. You know, like, I met the Prime Minister. Good for you. I was on the front page in the newspaper. I was on TV. Hi, Mom. Hi, Mom. All that, you know. All these great things have happened to me. I was a billionaire. You know, I was a Bill Gates. Right? Right? One is a billionaire, another is a Bill Gates. It's all the same. Right? Ultimately, these things are temporary. Right. These are not important. But our connection with Krishna is eternal. And our connection with Krishna's devotee is eternal. Eternal benefit. And therefore, the most important events in our life were when we were doing a little service for Krishna. Yeah, why not end with that? So, if there are any questions, then we'll try to answer them. After all that, it's got to be at least one question. Well, these are complex questions, but we don't really see that so much, these descriptions. But it seems to be that somewhere these dimensions exist, like parallel realities. But we do see descriptions of stretching time, shrinking time, right? In scriptures, but as far as like these, whether time, past, present, and future exists like parallel realities, we do not find it so clearly described. So, unless you have some quotes and descriptions, I can't entertain it. Any? Yeah. Oh, then what is it?
I just want to say something about, maybe, because you're speaking about freedom.
Freedom.
Because I read something about you not talking.
Okay.
I am. In some book of Bhagavan, etc.
Bhagavan.
And he said that at one point that this is also described in another place, like for principles, we are following therefore principles of freedom, and that devotional service is actually the highest expression of freedom. That Vishwavadas are supposed to find our own way in devotional service, how actually we are forced actually during performing devotional service to find our own way how to go to back to Krishna. And we must recognize that way. And this is very important that we understand that we cannot get it just from outside. We must rely from inside.
Yes and no. We are getting the path, the prescribed path by the spiritual master. And he's an external source to us, and he gives us how to attain Krishna. And then we have to take that instruction and guideline of the spiritual master and fill it in on our own. And we have to realize it. The instruction of the spiritual master, we have to put it into practice and experience it ourselves. Yeah? Vyasa prasadat shrutavan, by following the mercy of prasad of Vyasadev, very strictly, all these instructions, saksat katataya darshan, that then Sanjaya got the direct darshan of the discussion that took place between Krishna and Arjuna. Yeah. Then he had like that dur darshan that he could see long distance. Prabhupada said like television camera, right? Yes, just like camera, he could see. Yes. Long distance. Sanjaya could see. It is described. Like that television camera. I see. Oh, Krishna. My God. It gets more intense now. That's the point. So first guru, and then we must realize it ourselves. So yes, it must be our own experience. It's not parroting.
Yeah, huh? That's what I thought.
Yes.
It's not like just we perform sadhana and it without inner understanding sadhana.
Ah. Yes.
This is what all
yeah. This is called the parrot principle, right?
Said like Southern Bhakti is not devotional service. It's just helping.
Okay. Well. Okay. Okay. Yes. Calm down. There are different definitions in bhakti. So bhakti is made up out of two sessions, right? One is called Vaidhi Bhakti, and the other one is called Raganuga Bhakti. Right? And that session is called Sadhana Bhakti. Yeah? So Sadhana Bhakti has two divisions, Vaidhi Bhakti and Raganuga Bhakti. Then beyond that, third level of Bhakti, Bhava Bhakti, and beyond that, Prema Bhakti. So Sadhana Bhakti, it says that the first part, Vaidhi Bhakti, is sometimes not really Bhakti. Sometimes, by some Acharyas, not called really Bhakti. Other times it's called Bhakti also. Prabhupada calls it bhakti and everything. Other acharyas are saying, real bhakti begins on Raganuga, on the spontaneous platform, they say. See? So, like that, these statements are there. But anyway, you know, these are just definitions. The real thing is, let's do something for Krishna. Because every little thing for Krishna will bring about, will free the soul. It will free the soul from that false covering of mud, of stool, of falsity, of lies, of cheating, of attachment to gross activities, right? And of ultimately this gross body, this hunk of flesh that we are locked in with all its unpleasant things. We will become free from all that and realize our eternal spiritual body. Then we are free, free to be what we really are and free to serve Krishna unlimitedly and free to experience true nectar and true happiness. And that is freedom. Any other question? Yes. Linear. Well, but then there are again references that there is some sort of subtle level where time exists in the material world, where it's not linear, but that there's also some coexisting of things. And then we have sages, there are three Galagya, and they see all these dimensions, etc. It gets very complex. So there's not so much information. But there is some mention that it's not only linear. Material mind, intelligence.
They can be used in Krishna's service, they become spiritualized. So what happens to the ahankara?
The false ego. Yes, it dissolves.
It
also, they also dissolve in due course of time. The point is that the hold your horses. The material mind and false and intelligence and false ego. He said, we heard that we can engage the material mind and intelligence in the service of Krishna, but what happens to the false ego? Does it dissolve? Yes, it dissolves. And not the material mind and intelligence? No, that dissolves also. Yes, in due course of time. It said that by the chanting of Hare Krishna, the subtle body dissolves. It's scary, isn't it? Are you sure you want to chant Hare Krishna? Your subtle body will dissolve, right? But it is said that the present mind has borrowed its functions of thinking, feeling, and willing from the soul, like the fetters that may be borrowed of the peacock, and we're walking around, you know, trotting around with great pride, you know, for our decoration, but actually it's the peacocks, right? So we have borrowed thinking, feeling, and willing from the soul, and now it all happens on the level of the mind. Therefore, we don't care about our present feelings because it's all mental, sentimental, right? And therefore, sorry, no, don't care, no. Where these elements go? These elements merge just with the rest of elements because there's the conservation of energy and nothing ever disappears. These are my separated energies, Krishna said. So although our connection with it dissolves, otherwise they just remain to exist. It's not that anything ceases to exist. It goes on. So when the word dissolves is used, it means then that connection where we are trapped in it is freed, and the soul then becomes free from that covering. That's where the word dissolves applies. But it's not that. That false ego is the energy of Krishna. It's there. Right? It's all pervading in the Mahatattva. Yes. Yeah, Dhritarashtra, he was doing that when he left his body, and there's some other descriptions also, yes. So, he did that by a yogic process. We don't do it by a yogic process, but in the end, the holy name dissolves the subtle body, then we understand that these elements are the energies of Krishna, the eight separated energies of Krishna. They don't disappear, they are there, they're just changing their forms, etc. But in itself, they're present and eternal, so... Therefore, they must be, in one sense, you can say, they merge with the rest of the element. Whether there is some sort of ball, you know, of false ego being thrown off of our soul and then just merges with the total element. I think that would be a dramatic filming presentation of something that happens on another plane. Okay. We'll end with this, I think. Thanks very much. Srila Prabhupada. Ki jai.